Thursday, April 11th. We'll call the regular assembly meeting to order. Beverly, you want to do roll call?
Jim?
Here.
Warren?
Here.
Josie?
Here.
Paul?
Yes.
Brenda? Brenda?
Brenda's not here at the moment. She's working on a lot of issues up at the clinic, but it all depends here. She might show up again.
Okay. Tom?
Here.
Chris and Daly asked to be excused today, as well as Samantha. We have a quorum.
How many people?
We have four. Jim, yeah. Warren, Josie, and you. And Tom. Five. We have a quorum.
So, just a reminder, if you're not talking, you should mute yourself, because these speakers pick up everything. Just so you know. So, who all do we have in the King Cove office?
We have Warren, Jackie, and Seward.
Okay. And Cold Bay? No. Nelson Lagoon? No. False Pass?
No, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Sandpoint, Beverly, Alvin, Paul, and Jim. Actan?
Hi, Mr. Mayor. It's just myself, Josie.
Thank you, Josie. In Anchorage office.
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck, there's myself, Annie, Ernie, Joe Levesque, Ken, Matt, Talia, and Talia's.
Okay.
Just one Talia.
I put two down, so anyway. Okay, so we need a motion to adopt the agenda.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
I'd like to make a motion adopting the agenda. We can do it this way. With the following minor changes, which would be to move item 12 up on the agenda to make it number 5 and renumber the rest accordingly.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Who moved first? Somebody get it on the table?
Paul did. Can you hear Paul?
Paul did?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll second it, Warren here.
Okay. Thank you, Warren.
But it still had to get on the board before you even amended.
So anyway, the motion was basically to adopt the agenda with the one change of moving item number 12 up in becoming item number 5 or 4A, whichever you want.
Number 12, moving forward.
Yeah. Any other?
And Mr. Mayor, just to clarify, I think our attorney has to go to another meeting, gives him an opportunity to give us his report.
Okay. Okay, if there's no other movement on the agenda.
This is Brenda, yeah.
Oh, okay, thanks Brenda. If there's no objections to that amendment, the agenda will stand as amended. Thank you. Public comments on any agenda items at this time. Anyone feel like they have a conflict of interest on any items? All right, so we are going to go to item number 12, old business, Lucian's East Borough Assembly eligibility And so everyone knows, our borough attorney, Joe Levesque, is present at the meeting. So, Annie, you want to start this one off?
Yes, Mayor, back in assembly. So there are two memos in the packet. The first memo is dated April 4th, 2024. This is the memo that Joe Levesque has provided. And then the second memo is the one that was dated February 27th, 2024. And that was information that was provided at the March assembly meeting. That being said, today I'm going to pass it off to Joe, but we are discussing the eligibility of assembly members who move out of jurisdiction. And there are some questions on here that we need to consider and then hopefully get some direction from the assembly on where to move forward. So with that, I'll pass this off to Joe Levesque.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the assembly, Joe Levesque, borough attorney. So we've, through the clerk, we have contacted assembly member Daley Shack a couple of times. And in my first memo, you can see Exhibit A is attached to it. This is the February 27th memo. And that is basically Daley Shack's first attempt to let the assembly know what her situation was. Does everybody have that? So in there, of course, she says she's been staying with her daughter in Wasilla. She hasn't changed her residency. She still resides in Cold Bay in Nelson Lagoon. In Nelson Lagoon, she has a home. She spends a lot of time there. Right now, she's helping her daughter out, and she's getting a lot of medical issues that she couldn't take care of from inside the region. She still has her voter's registration in Cold Bay. And also her post office box. And she said she loves being on the assembly, hopes to continue. If and when the assembly decides to move, if she decides to move anywhere else, she'll let the assembly know. So that was her first justification as to why she's been gone. When did she move? Does anybody know? It's been over 8 months or? Beverly, you have an idea, don't you?
No, actually, I have no idea when she actually moved there, but I know it's been a while now.
I believe in the letter she wrote, she said July.
July. July of last year, 2023.
Okay. All right, I didn't see it. It's not in there. That response. Well, anyway, to bring the assembly current, today we got word that Daley Shack is sick, so she's unable to attend this meeting, and so the clerk sent her a list of those questions that the assembly is mandated by ordinance to go through and make a determination, and Beverly, the clerk, sent her the 9 questions. And essentially, I don't know if everybody has this, but I can read this into the record.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, so these are the 9 questions that the assembly can ask. And the first one is residential property ownership and occupation, where the assembly member or member of their household owns residential property that they occupy within the borough. And she says, I have a home in Nelson Lagoon. And then leasing or renting non-transient residential property, where and for what term the assembly member leases or rents and resides at non-transient residential property within the borough. She says no. Number 3, residence on a vessel, whether the assembly member lives aboard a vessel and rents transient or permanent moorage within the borough. She says no. Number 4, duration and location of residency, the location and amount of time the assembly member resides at residential property owned or rented by them within the borough. And he said, 4, not sure yet, 3 summer months for sure is what she responds. She plans to be in the borough for 3 summer months for sure. And then 5, she gives her P.O. box. It's her mailing box in Cold Bay. And number 6, 7, 8, and 9, where her motor vehicles and goods are physically located, she says no. Social activities and club memberships, places the assembly member participates in activities or social clubs or other groups within the borough, she says no. School attendance of household children, the places where children of the household of the assembly member attend school within the borough, and she says no. And, or none. And other relevant factors, she answers no. So that's what the assembly has before it today. And just going through the ordinance, which is 2.04.048, declaration of vacancy. It says an assembly seat becomes vacant for any reason set out in AS 2920-170 upon a declaration of vacancy by the assembly by resolution. And just to let you know what that one, 2920-170, that statute says the governing body may provide by ordinance the manner in which vacancies occurs in an elected office, except the office of mayor or school board member, unless otherwise provided by ordinance. The governing body shall declare an elective office other than the office of the mayor or school board member vacant when the person elected, one, fails to qualify or take office within 30 days of election or appointment, is physically absent from the municipality for 90 consecutive days unless excused by the governing body. To my knowledge, this governing body has never granted any kind of exception. If the assembly member resigns and the resignation is accepted, if the assembly member is physically or mentally unable to perform the duties of office as determined by 2/3 of the governing body, is convicted of a felony or offense involving violation of the oath of office, is convicted of a felony or misdemeanor described in AS 1556, and 2/3 of the members of the governing body concur in expelling the person elected. Seven, is convicted of a violation of AS 1513. Eight, no longer physically resides in the municipality and the governing body by 2/3 votes, declares the seat vacant. This paragraph does not apply to a member of the governing body who forfeits office under 2920-140. And that is somebody that doesn't have the qualifications. So if a member of the governing body misses three consecutive regular meetings and is not excused, that also is a reason. So with that, what the assembly needs to determine, and I'm not sure if the assembly is going to vote today or if there's going to be a resolution at the next meeting. That's where the assembly can vote.
Yeah.
So this is where we're at. I hoped that the assembly member would be here and that somebody would, basically run through those questions with her and try to determine, when are you moving back? Are you going to live permanently in Wasilla? So I don't know the answer to those questions. Anybody from the assembly have any questions of me?
Joe, I've got a clarification point I need. When you're talking about 2/3 of the assembly, is that 2/3 of the assembly present or 2/3 of the assembly as a whole?
Okay, we'll read it again here. No longer physically resides in the municipality and the governing body by 2/3 vote declares the seat vacant. So the governing body by 2/3 vote declares the seat vacant. So I think it's the members that are present.
Okay.
Just
go along with
two-thirds of
it. We just need to be sure on that as well. Okay.
Yeah. That's what it appears to say. So does anybody on the assembly have any questions of me?
Anyone know how long it takes to lose your voting right within our borough? That's the first thing on there.
What was that, Jim?
Like, how long does it take? It said when you read it, you could lose. If you're gone too long, you can't vote within your region either. Like, how long does it take to lose that?
Oh, you mean status in the state as a voter or something?
Is it the state or the borough?
But that doesn't have anything to do with this, I don't think, because ours spells out that basically the way he spells it out is if you're unexcused for three consecutive meetings, you could be removed. So that's basically 3 months, right? Three normal meetings.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually a good question because even though the ordinance says that if the assembly member is no longer eligible to vote, then the assembly can remove her. But I actually warned the assembly in my last memo not to rely solely on that ground because of some recent Alaska Supreme Court decisions that have basically said, for instance, everybody knows this guy, Robert Gillum. I think he passed a year ago or so. But Gillum, the richest man in Alaska, owns a lodge on Lake Iliamna. And, of course, Lake and Peninsula Borough has this thing about this mine out there, this pebble mine. And he's one of the advocates against the mine. And so he decided, and his son decided, and some other family members decided that they were all going to start voting in the Lake and Peninsula Borough. And so the key question was, can somebody who lives in Anchorage, declares their resident, their permanent residency in Anchorage for tax purposes, owns a lodge in Iliamna that they might go to 1 week or 2 weeks out of the year, are they eligible to vote in Lake and Peninsula? And the Alaska Supreme Court said yes. It's very subjective. So in your heart of hearts, if you believe you should be voting in Utqiagvik, then even though you live within the Aleutians East Borough, you could do that according to this state law. So I don't want to just really hang anything simply on her eligibility or ineligibility to vote. I think that the determination needs to be, you know, we just need to go step by step. What has she given us on this? Do we know about this? Has she provided the information that we requested? And make a determination. Now, as far as the three consecutive assembly members meetings that she's missed, I don't believe she has. So I don't think that's going to be one of our issues. Maybe Glenora knows that.
I don't think she's missed three in a row.
Yeah, that were unexcused.
Yes, that were unexcused.
Okay, so you know, I don't think that's a good one. So I think the assembly needs to go through that list and consider other factors to reach its decision. And the most important thing about this, and the assembly members I know are all cognizant of this, is that whatever we do sets a precedent. And then in the future, you know, that's going to be sort of the roadmap of what the assembly does and how it manages its seats.
Joe, Paul has a question for you.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. Joe, looking at that list of nine items, do you have to vote no on all of them or on some of them?
You go through those and you make a decision. Has she done this? Does she do this? Do we not know this, for instance? Yeah. But at the end of the day, what the assembly has to do is it has to make a determination whether to declare that seat vacant. And it's basically because she's not living in the community. And so what are her connections to the community besides having a house in Nelson Lagoon? And even at the last meeting, as I recall, and I'm sure it's in the minutes, but somebody asked her when she was going to return, and she said she didn't know. That's what I recall her saying. I can't tell you. I don't know. So those are the kind of responses the assembly has been given. So the assembly needs to decide now if it wants to declare that seat vacant or not.
Well, just to follow up, the permanent fund, for instance, there's a bunch of yeses and nos, and you have to answer, I can't remember if yes or no, to all of them would qualify for a permanent fund. And so to me, it would be easier if it's laid out in that form, where you either have to, for instance, we'll go to question three. Is there a way to turn that into a yes or no question so the assembly wouldn't have to make the decision? It's made just by ordinance. Is there a way to turn this questionnaire into a simple way, because this may or may not, it's probably going to come up in the future.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can look at that in the future, Paul, to make changes. But right now, this is the ordinance that's before the assembly. And it says these are some of the factors, relevant factors, that the assembly should consider in deciding whether or not to declare that seat vacant. And so you just take the totality of the circumstances.
Yeah, which seemed, you know, just to take it away from the assembly making this decision would be a better way. And on that, for how long you are gone from your residence, you know, whether it's 6 months, 4 months, if it's clear cut, that would be a preferable way rather than having the assembly interpret what the correct answer could be or should be.
Right. Well, this, of course, is state law, and then it's also embedded in your code as the borough's law. So,
yeah, but
I mean, the questions came, you know, those are from the borough code, but essentially the way that it's done in front of the governing body will always remain the same.
Yeah.
It's the governing body that must make that decision.
Well, just getting back to the permanent fund board doesn't vote on who's eligible. It's clear cut who qualifies and who doesn't. And I think that's what we should strive for. I don't know what the rest of the assembly wants to do at this particular meeting, but in the future, I think it might be helpful to the borough and the assembly to have a clear cut way of determining if you qualify for the assembly or not. Thank you.
So,
okay, thanks.
Joe and Annie, so if the assembly right now is not comfortable dealing with this because they want to see more clarification or a different way to address the questions to the problem, can they decide to bring it up at the next meeting? And if they do that, is there a way, because Open Meetings Act and everything else, is there a way the staff could rewrite the questions and send them out to the assembly members and see if we could get them more in line with what they want before the next meeting? Is that possible,
you know,
or is that illegal?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why the assembly couldn't do that. It's up to the assembly what they want to do. If they want to delay a decision, they want to look at the questions in a slightly different way, then, you know, that's their wish is granted. I mean, it's the assembly.
Okay. Anyway.
So this is Brenda.
Go ahead, Brenda.
So her seat is up in 2025. So if we moved on this, whether this meeting, next meeting, that would it open up in the next election since there's another year left on that term, or would there be an appointment?
Normally, if the election is too far out, then there's an appointment of somebody until the next election. And then they'll be running for the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whoever that person is.
Joe, I think if you're more than 6 months from your term, then you make an appointment, right? Until the...
That's what I've done in the past.
Until
yes.
The next election.
Mm-hmm. And just follow up on that, to follow up on Brenda's question, is her term up this year?
25.
Oh, 25.
So she has just over a year.
So it would just be if the assembly declares a seat open, the election would be for a one-year term.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Essentially, yeah, the remainder of the term.
Yeah. Until October.
Excuse me, I have a question, Mr. Josie.
Go ahead, Josie.
So she did state in the last meeting that she was planning on moving back in May, and if we postpone this until then, is that still going to be the question? You know, she's calling in and she's back home and she's there, she says, for at least 3 months, maybe longer. this will still need to be discussed for, you know, like Paul said, the future if we have this issue again. So getting the questions clarified to, you know, you were there, how long were you there, were you gone for X amount of days or whatever, to make it clear cut where the assembly doesn't have to have the discussion every time is probably a good idea. But waiting until next month, and I'm thinking that she's going to be back home because she said she was moving home in May. She just didn't know when. But okay. That's my thoughts.
But if you look at, let's say times got tough here and we all moved to Anchorage for 10 months a year, what would the people want the assembly to decide on this? I mean, what do we want as the borough to have as our rule? It's kind of the question, is what we're trying to do, right?
Do we, in our current code, does it specify in there on how much time you're supposed to spend inside the borough?
No, it doesn't really say how much time inside the borough. It just says that if you relocate your residence outside the borough for a certain amount of time, then you may no longer be eligible to retain your seat.
Does it say what that certain amount of time is?
It says the assembly member no longer physically resides in the borough if it is shown that the assembly member has established a place of residence outside the borough and has resided outside the borough for 90 days or more consecutive or non-consecutive days during the immediately preceding six-month period without first having obtained a determination by the assembly that unusual circumstances exist that justify both the temporary establishment of such a residence and the physical presence of the person outside the borough. So it says 90 days.
So 90 days in a 6 month. So if you're gone for 90 days in a 6 month period, you could be removed.
According to the code and according to state law, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to make sure everybody understands it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what it says, unless they get a determination.
Okay.
And to clarify, while Joe's here, he mentioned 3/4 of the total assembly, is that correct?
No, those present.
Okay.
Two-thirds of those present.
Okay, so doing the math to see how...
You're good at math.
So you would need only, there's 5 people present, you would need how many votes, just to say what Joe says, how many votes to make a decision with... If there's 5 present now.
Well, you need two-thirds. So
give us a number.
3 out of 5.
I think somebody's running the math here.
But according to... She's been gone 300 days and didn't get prior approval. In that sense, she's failed. And she should have probably came paid for it.
Right?
If you want to...
You need three.
Yeah. Well, we're calculating 390. If we're looking for the rule.
Yeah.
Which I don't want to steer to go, honestly, but if we're going to start setting rules, that's what we're doing, right? Not whether we are good buddies and want to hang out.
Hey, Jim, can you speak up? We can't hear you in Anchorage.
Oh, I almost forgot what I said. Yeah, I guess if we're looking at the rules, you know, it's going to be 300 days before she comes back rather than the 90. And we're trying to figure out our rules, not whether we like each other and want to hang out. That's the difference, right? So to speak.
I mean, I guess that's a good way to put it.
Because the decision's tough either way. It's because Daly's a nice person. It would be tough either or.
So to clarify the math on it, is 3/4 of 5 is 15/4. 3 3/4. So If you need more than that, you need 4 or 5 votes to make a decision.
Two-thirds.
Oh, two-thirds. Quarters. I keep getting the three-quarters in here.
That's that pen. You got to get a different color pen than it does it. The weird number. So three.
So you would need 3 votes, Paul.
I'm sorry?
Out of the 5. You would need 3 votes out of the 5.
Yeah, 3 out of the 5. Other comment?
Comment, Warren here.
Go ahead, Warren.
On the intentions of the elected official here, where they're going to live for the most of their year versus where they're going to live 3 months of the year. And the ability to get to the meeting station, which would be in Anchorage office, looks like to me that from once you left Cold Bay, that, you know, the writing's on the wall if she's going to be able to make it to the meetings. I know she wants to represent her area at Nelson Lagoon, and that's where her home is right now. But when she's not going to be able to live in the area anymore, you know, and I know she wants the position, but when we need representation out here, and to Jimmy's comment of her, Josie's comment of her going out in May, presumably 3 months, who knows if that's going to happen. And she wants to get her work done in those 3 months, and then for the rest of the year, she could just coast on with the rest of her term. But the borough always has a lot of business to take care of. And if we have someone who, I don't know if you want to say skipping out, not being there. Sorry, I was down in Seattle during the last meeting, but we're back in Cape Hope now. We didn't move to Anchorage yet, but there's some thinking to do here, and we want to support you, but yet we want to take care of the borough business too. And if we're not able to do that, and if she's living in Wasilla, she might be. How do you know what's going on in Nelson Lagoon or Cold Bay, for that matter? So those are my comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Warren.
So, Paul, one more clarification while Joe's still here. If the assembly makes a motion and votes and whatever happens, what would the correct motion be, Joe?
Does her seat have like a number attached to it? Is it a number or a letter?
It's a letter.
Yeah, it would just be a motion to declare that seat vacant due to the assembly members having relocated out of the jurisdiction for over 90 consecutive days.
And we would probably put that in a resolution for you at the next meeting.
Oh, they couldn't do it now?
A motion, a resolution is just a formal motion, right?
Yeah.
So I guess you could.
Yeah, you could do it now, and you can just write up the resolution at the next meeting. We do it now and vote now, and then the resolution shows up, and what do we do with that? Just look at it, or we vote on it again? Or what?
Yeah, you'll have to pass the resolution at the next meeting.
But maybe make a motion that you want to go in a certain direction, and then we'll bring the resolution forward at the next meeting for your final vote.
Okay, I'll make that motion to make the seat vacant due to the 90 days out of the borough district here, and just so we can get moving on here. Otherwise, we'll be caught up all day on this. If the assembly wants to vote on it or to get a second on it, I'll go ahead and make that motion.
This is Josie. I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Beverly, could you repeat the motion for everybody?
Warren made a motion to declare seat G vacant due to the assembly member not being present in the borough
for
more than 90 consecutive days.
Just to clarify, Mr. Mayor, if the motion is voted on and at least three people are in favor of that motion, the seat would be vacant. Is that correct?
That's the way I understand it.
Okay, just to make sure everybody knows what you're voting on.
It will be vacant once the resolution passes.
Okay, so next
in May.
In May.
Next month.
So this motion is a guideline
to set up the resolution.
Okay.
Yeah. Or would you be okay with changing it to give direction to prepare a resolution for the May meeting?
Yeah, that's going to be the protocol here, the way it looks. Sounds fine to me.
And the second concurs?
Yes, I concur.
Okay, thank you. Okay?
So
you want to read the new one?
Annie has it, Annie.
Corrected one?
Annie.
Annie, would you read it so Beverly gets it down right?
I did write it all down, but basically, let's say the motion is that the Assembly has given direction to administration to draft a resolution stating that the seat is declared vacant due to the Assembly member being gone for 90 consecutive days. Does that work?
Yeah.
You could throw in there too without a chain of justification, a waiver from the Assembly. So it says, without first having obtained a determination by the Assembly that unusual circumstances exist that justify both the temporary establishment of such a residence and the physical presence of the person outside the borough.
I have it on record.
And Beverly, that's in the memo, the first memo, that language.
Also in the code.
And in the code.
Okay.
I have one other point. So I know in the code it says 90 days in a 6-month period, right? So does it have to be 90 consecutive days or should it be 90 days in a 6-month period?
It reads, I'll just read it. This is from 204048. Declaration of vacancy. It says, if the declaration of vacancy is because the assembly member no longer physically resides in the borough, there is a rebuttable presumption the assembly member no longer physically resides in the borough if it is shown that the assembly member has established a place of residence outside the borough and has resided outside the borough for 90 or more consecutive or non-consecutive days during the immediately preceding 6-month period.
Okay. That's what I have.
I thought so.
Okay. Establishing a resident is just living in a house, correct? She don't own the house she's in. How I see it.
Okay. So now that we've got all that out of the way, is there any other discussion or comments before I call a question?
If we vote, is she?
I can't hear you very well.
If we are we voting on the resolution to be on the next agenda, or are we voting on whether this is the decision she's on?
No, they've already changed it all. So basically, if you get three votes in favor of this particular piece of legislation, what you're saying is that you agree to having this put together, and it'll come back as a resolution in the May meeting.
And then we'll vote on her condition then to be on or off.
Yeah, then you have to vote on it again at the...
Okay, so this isn't a decision. It's a decision to decide.
This sets it up.
Mm-hmm.
And at the next meeting, you'll finalize it.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out to you that there is section 2.04.050, filling a vacancy. It's a little bit different than what we discussed, but it appears essentially the same in my opinion. If a vacancy occurs in the assembly by vote of a majority of its remaining members shall designate a person to fill the vacancy within 30 days.
But we updated that.
Yeah, that's updated?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That's updated.
Okay, that's okay. Then I stand corrected. Okay. All right.
Just so everybody knows, that was done here recently, and basically, so now, instead of the assembly picking somebody and appointing them, it's we accept resumes or interest from people inside the borough, and then it'll go from there.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the assembly? Hearing none. Vote on the question.
Brenda. Brenda, you're muted.
Yes.
Okay. Paul.
Yes.
Josie.
Yes.
Chris.
Absent.
Oh, sorry. Jim.
Yes.
Tom.
Yes.
Warren.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Joe. I think we can let you run off now.
Yeah, I have to go to the city of Houston then.
Wow.
Thank you.
Good drive.
Okay.
Long drive.
Okay.
It's my blood.
Okay, we're going to go back to... Did you have something? No? All right, so before us we have... we need a motion to bring the minutes of the March 14th meeting to the floor. We need a motion and a second.
I'll make a motion. This is Josie.
Okay, thank you, Josie.
Seconded. Warren.
Seconded by Warren. Anybody have any corrections to the minutes? Hearing none. If there's no objection, the minutes will stand as written. We need a motion and a second to bring the financials of February 2024 to the floor.
This is Brenda. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Brenda.
This is Jim. I'll second.
I'll second.
Okay, second by Jim. Annie.
Yes, Mayor, I'll start an assembly before you are the February 2024 financials. This is how many months? 7 months into the fiscal year, so we're 66.6% into the fiscal year. Just a few things to highlight is our interest revenue, which is still doing great. We did bring in $112,000 in February of 2024, so we have well exceeded our initial expectation in May, which is great. However, the bad news is on the raw fish tax, which is R01218, we did bring in the $220,000, but really in February we brought in $214,000, and about $6,000 of that was from a small processor for January processing. So at $214,000, that is 59.2% of the five-year average. So it is way less than what we typically receive at this time. Overall, our general fund is doing well with our year-to-date budget. We are at 80.96%, and that is largely due to the state shared raw fish tax, which came in $741,000 over what we anticipated, and that's based off of the prior year's fish tax revenue from the state. So that's one of the reasons we're doing well as the interest revenue. For FY25, I'm not sure if that will continue. As far as expenditures go, there's really nothing to highlight. Here, we're tracking along where we should. There are a few expenses that have exceeded that, but that's largely dues and fees and other things like that, that prices have increased since what we anticipated in May of 2023. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the assembly? Hearing none. Question on the motion?
Brenda?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. Your investment in report is in your packet for your review. We have one item on the consent agenda, so we need a motion and a second to bring the consent agenda to the floor.
I'll make a motion. This is Josie.
Thank you, Josie.
Is Jim a second?
Thank you, Jim. Annie?
Yeah, I'll pass this off to Ernie.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, would it be appropriate to just read the resolution for the folks at home?
Sure, but.
Sure. So resolution 2435 is a resolution of the Aleutians East Borough honoring the King Cove High School boys basketball team, T-Jacks, as the 2024 boys ASAA 1A basketball state champions. Whereas the King Cove boys basketball team, T-Jacks, went undefeated for the first time in school history in the 2023-2024 season with an overall season record of 23 wins and no losses. And whereas the King Cove T-Jacks won the Aleutian Chain Regional Basketball Tournament in Nustuyahuk, Alaska, earning the team the number 3 seed in the 1A Boys Basketball State Tournament at the UAA Alaska Airlines Center in Anchorage, Alaska. And whereas the T-Jacks overwhelmed the ANIAC team 80-40 in the first round, won against the Lumen Christi 53-29 in the quarterfinals, defeated the number 2 seed Scammon Bay 71-58 in the semifinal round, and beat the number 1 seed Cake 39-31 in the ASAA 1A Boys Basketball Championship game March 16, 2024. And whereas the boys, the Aleutians East Borough, is proud of the accomplishments of the 2023-2024 King Cove T-Jacks boys basketball team, and I'll list them out: Jaeger Sean Brandle, Lamb Brandle, Ashton Gould, Michael Gould, Siler Gould, Logan Iapana, Brennan Larson, Jersey Mack, Thomas Mack, Noah Roberts, Nick Standish, Robert Thompson, Riley Wilson, and head coach Ken Barber. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Aleutians East Borough Assembly hereby honors the King Cove T-Jacks and Coach Ken Barber as the Alaska School Activities Association Class 1A Boys Basketball State Champions, approved and adopted this day by the Aleutians East Borough.
Thank you, Ernie. Very good. I watched as many of those games as I could. Paul?
Yeah, thanks. I was able to attend the first game in Anchorage, and I had to leave, but I also, that same day, watch Cake, who was previously undefeated, play, and people from King Cove who were watching also. And whether it was a consensus that King Cove could beat them, and they did. So it was a great job by King Cove.
No, it's really good. Any other comment?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Yeah, just to note that the Coaches Association voted the Coach of the Year, Ken Barber, the Player of the Year, Jaeger Sean Brando, and Jaeger Sean, and Thomas Mack, and Michael Gould all made the All-State team. And for the girls' team, Ariana Wilson from Sandpoint made that All-State team as well. I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, thanks. No, that's great. Very good. Kids are doing good. Okay. Question on the motion?
Josie?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes. Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Thank you. We have one public hearing, which is Ordinance 2404. We need a motion to bring it to the floor and for public hearing.
Motion, Warren.
Thank you, Warren.
I'll second, Mrs. Josie.
Thanks, Josie. Annie?
Yes, Mayor, Osterbeck and Assembly. Ordinance 2404 authorizes the mayor to negotiate and execute a sublease within the Cold Bay Terminal for volcanic hazard mitigation. The Alaska Volcano Observatory, which I'll refer to as AVO, currently does have equipment located in the Cold Bay Terminal to monitor volcanic activity throughout the state and mitigate impacts from volcanic eruptions. In 2020, the borough and AVO were working on formalizing an agreement for their equipment in the terminal, and then COVID occurred and the discussions halted. In February 2024, AVO contacted the borough and expressed a desire to enter into an agreement for a portion of the terminal for the purposes as described. AVO has equipment located in the terminal and they're facing a telecommunication problem and would like to request permission to install additional equipment in the terminal to resolve it. So by passing this, that will be approved. And we recommend approving this sublease. So we will be charging an administrative charge for the use of the facility at $2,320 per year. That will increase by 3.5% each year. And what is different from what was presented last time is I did put a draft of the sublease in here for your reference. That wasn't completed at the last minute, but the draft is in here, which has been reviewed by AVO, which is a branch of the federal government. So they've approved this to form, and the state has also agreed to this as well. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Paul?
Just a quick question. Annie, how much money to the borough is that per year if this passes and negotiated?
Yeah, it would be $2,320 for the first year, and then that will gradually increase over time. And that, we call it an administration charge because they can't call it rent because the federal government won't allow that. But that basically pays for their very small square footage that they take upstairs on the second floor. And it also covers the electrical costs associated with the equipment.
Okay. So to clarify the electrical, is they don't have their own meter. We're paying electrical and this reimburses us. Is that
correct? Yes.
It seems like it would be higher for electrical, but I guess we'll find out. I'm not opposed to this, but it'd be nice to know exactly how it turns out. I guess we'll get a report later after. Yeah, thanks.
Other comments? Okay. At this time, then, we'll open the public hearing on Ordinance 2404. Okay, we don't have any public comments. I'm going to close the public hearing on Ordinance 2404 and call the question.
Paul?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. So our next is Resolution 2436. We need a motion and a second to bring it on the floor.
This is Brenda. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Brenda.
This is Josie. I'll second.
Thanks, Josie. Annie?
Yes, Mayor, Spec Assembly. Resolution 2436 authorizes the mayor to execute Amendment Number 3 with Dow and increase the contract ceiling amount for the term contract to $50,000 for professional engineering, project management, and construction management services for the Aleutians East Borough. In August 2020, the borough entered into a contract with Dow for professional engineering, project management, and construction management services. The period of performance for the contract was from September 1, 2020 through June 30th, 2022, with the option to renew for an additional 3 one-year periods by mutual consent of both parties. May 2022, Amendment Number 1 was executed, exercising the first one-year renewal. In April 2023, Amendment Number 2 was executed, exercising the second one-year renewal option, which is effective until June 30th of 2024. And now we are before you requesting to authorize the third one-year renewal period, which would become effective July 1, 2024, ending June 30th, 2025. Administration would also like to increase the contract ceiling from $25,000 to $50,000 for the AEB term contract. Other projects for maintenance will be mutually agreed upon per project, and that's brought before the assembly at that time. And one reason for the increase is we have been using them a lot lately on all the maintenance projects that we have, and I did supersede that $25,000 this year. So we thought $50,000 would be a safe contract ceiling, and if we don't reach it, that's great, but it's there in case we need it. And that will be reflected in the FY25 proposed budget that will be presented to you. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know.
Okay, any questions?
Paul?
It's for this third year, it's $50,000 instead of it was $25,000, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and then I'm not sure if this term is correct about a ceiling. Would it be more like a floor than a ceiling, this contract, because it can go beyond $50,000. Can't it, or am I misreading it?
Well, technically, yeah, I suppose it can. We try not to do that. This year, unfortunately, I did go over, which is the first time I've done it since we've hired Dow. But yeah, it's a contract ceiling. Technically, we can't go over it unless, we can do separate projects and put those under different, like, budget line items. So for instance, let's say I was working on the Cold Bay Terminal, I needed their assistance, we could bill it to possibly Fund 22 for the Cold Bay Terminal funds that we have available. So but that would come before the assembly for approval to do that. It's considered a contract ceiling. That's the language we use in all of our professional contracts or service contracts that we have.
So what would the total amount that we're paying to Dow be for this new term? I guess, what do you think would be?
Well, I'm hoping it's not $50,000, but it could potentially be $50,000.
Okay, other questions?
Yeah, quick. Go ahead. What is Dow's role in, say, a maintenance project?
Here.
They're an engineering company, correct?
Yes. So Dow is an engineering company that provides engineering services for us on a lot of our projects. They also provide project management services as well. So they're kind of like our in-house engineers, project management entity, if you will. And they serve that role for, I don't even remember now, 10 years? Wow. It's been a long time.
Okay. Yeah. Someone else had a question.
Yeah, Warren here. More or less a comment. I guess I know we're talking project management and the construction management. So when they do a survey of a project that we want done, or they go ahead and inspect buildings or whatever, this doesn't include any of the construction of a project. So I know that they are a real big outfit in the state, and they, $50,000, actually for what they're doing for us. For instance, the pool project, like how much money did we spend on them for evaluating the pool and the project as it went along?
I would have Yeah, I would have to go back and break that out specifically, but that has been charged to the term contract, except for one visit when Dell actually went on site for, well, got stuck there for a week for a two-day project, but that came out of a different pot of money, but I would have to break that out. But basically under the contract, like the term contract, they helped me with situating the boiler situation and making sure that we're putting in the right equipment, or the electrical issue in Falls Pass. They've been like bird dogging the ACS plain old telephone line, or the POTS line it's called. So they assist with a lot of those aspects and keep us in line, and they understand the terminology, and their subcontractors understand the terminology. So they assist with a lot of that. Now, what would be separate would be something like the Sandpoint School deed project, where we've hired them separately to do the 35% design, 65% design, project management, et cetera. That's outside of that scope of work. So I don't know if that helps clarify it, but no, the term contract is very broad.
I understand what they do, and I just more or less wanted to make the comment to say that they're not included by any means on any of the construction part of what they're designing, what they put out for a bid on, or another subcontractor to do the work under them. And then I've seen that before in all of our packets. They spell it out pretty well on travel costs, hotel, or whatever, when we put them up in the village, and the work they do and how many hours it's going to take. They have that, the subcontractor has that spelled out, unless they use them also to bring that to us. So I know you guys decipher that part where you figure out how much of that project they did versus how much of a project the subcontractor does.
Yeah, that's
perfect. I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, other comments?
So Dell collects the workers? Like, our administration doesn't have to be involved once, say there's a problem?
Oh no, we're still involved. We're still very much intimately involved in all the projects, but they help assist getting them moved along. So for instance, like another example is we have the contract term contractors now, and they'll put work orders together for me and make sure all the design information is accurate and what we're asking for is correct. And then we all attend the meetings and make sure stuff's still moving forward. And I ultimately make most of the decisions on yes or no if we're proceeding in a certain fashion, but Dow's very much involved in the intricacies and the design work and what is actually needed at the facilities.
Other comments? Hearing none. Question on the motion?
Jim?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me. Okay, we need a motion and a second to bring resolution 2437 to the floor.
So moved. This is Josie.
Thank you, Josie.
Second, Warren.
Thanks, Warren. Annie?
Yes, Mayor, Spec Assembly Resolution 2437 authorizes UIC Naparit LLC to proceed with early release work for the Cold Bay Clinic in an amount not to exceed $42,000. The borough is in the process of renovating the Cold Bay Clinic. Dow has completed the 35% design and the 65% design, and UIC has been contracted to assist with pre-construction services for the remainder of the architectural and engineering design phase. During the pre-construction phase, it's been determined that a new generator will need to be purchased, which has an approximate 42-week lead time. Therefore, the borough is seeking authorization from the assembly to authorize UIC an early work package for the procurement of this long lead material. to minimize scheduling impacts and to expedite the project completion. The estimated cost for the purchase and the shipment of the generator is $41,860. Put a little buffer in there for the $42,000. If approved, the borough will use the borough's Healthy and Equitable Communities grant for this purchase. That's the grant that Talia's been working on, and this generator meets the criteria and has been approved at the state level. So, and it also needs to be spent like now, like otherwise we lose the funding. So those funds would be used for this purchase, which will free up some of the other money for other aspects of the project. So with that, Assembly recommends approval. If there's any questions, please let me know.
Paul?
Yeah. Is there an existing one now?
There is. It doesn't work. So that's part of the scope of work to replace the generator. It's already in the work package, but there is a generator. It's just not working right now. So we do need to replace it.
Didn't get all of that.
There is a current generator, but it doesn't work.
And we're stuck with CAD. Is that a choice from the bidder, I suppose, from the contractor?
Annie?
I missed that question. Can you please repeat that?
Yeah. I say it specifies a 25 kW Caterpillar, 2.2 liters. Is that the contractor's suggestion or our suggestion? Or?
Yeah. So that's been vetted by UIC, the contractor, as well as Dow and our subcontractor AMC that specializes in generators and mechanical work. So that will fit in the facility and it will be sufficient to meet the clinic's needs.
Other comment? Hearing none. Question?
Brenda?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. We have one more, so need a motion and a second to bring resolution 2438 to the floor.
This is Brenda, so moved.
Thank you, Brenda.
This is Josie, I'll second.
Thank you, Josie. Annie?
Ms. Mayor Osterbeck, so resolution 2438 relates to the disposal of surplus, obsolete, or unneeded supplies. According to our code, we need to come before the assembly to receive permission to sell these surplus, obsolete, or unneeded items. Before you is the data well wave buoy that is currently located in the Actan hangar. This was used during the hovercraft operation. It has not been used in years and it is sitting there. We have been approached by data well themselves that they're interested in purchasing the buoy from us. However, I couldn't say yes unless I had approval from the assembly. I do not see a need for this buoy at this point. We are still in the process of determining how much that would cost because it actually is, if you could see the picture on the draft auction thing, anyway, we're still trying to determine the cost for this. But with your permission, we'd like to go ahead and move forward with this and we'll determine a reasonable cost that we should sell it for. So if you have any questions, please let me know. Sorry, I stumbled over that one a little bit, but.
Questions for Annie.
One quick one, I looked at the pictures. That looked like the only person who would want to bid on it is a manufacturer. We should be able to sell it to about half price. Anyway, I don't see anybody else bidding on it.
Yeah, unfortunately, how our code is written, we do need to do it in this fashion.
somebody that's putting in a boat harbor breakwater or something might need one of these. Any comments or questions for Annie on the wave attenuator? Okay, hearing none. Question?
Warren?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Brenda? Brenda?
Yes.
Tom? Tom?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. So, our next item on the agenda is reports and updates. Annie.
Yes, Mayor, about us back in the assembly. My report is in the packet. I'll begin with the King Cove Access Project. Progress on the SEIS has been extremely slow since the March 4th, 2024 meeting with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and Department of Interior staff and the King Cove group. It currently is revolving around the discrepancy between the amount of land, public land, or federal lands that would be needed for the road alignment in the corridor. So they are believing that we should have 206 acres, while DOT and others believe 500 acres would be needed to build this for the land exchange and eventually a road. So there's a little bit of a holdup. There's been a lot of meetings to discuss this, and hopefully a decision will be made soon on that factor. And then the King Cove group also contacted the state of Alaska, requesting them to be formally involved in the SEIS process as a cooperating agency to help address the land issues and to actively participate in this process. It is anticipated that Department of Interior will ask the state of Alaska for land as part of the exchange process, so they should be involved in the conversation at this point. Finally, Senator Murkowski's senior staff is continuously engaged in the process. They do attend all the meetings as well and keep the senator updated on what is currently occurring and help out in the conversations. Finally, the King Cove Corporation is hosting a community workshop, which will occur, I believe, next week, if that's correct, Warren. And they're asking residents to review the land exchange maps and record comments about their personal knowledge and concerns regarding subsistence resources, locations, and concerns per the land exchange and eventual road location. So that, I believe, is happening next Thursday in King Cove. And then finally, there still is a lot of concern that this SEIS will not be finished by their December 2024 commitment, but U.S. Fish and Wildlife keeps ensuring us that they are working on it as hard as they can and plan on having it finished then. So with that, if there's any questions on that, please let me know before I move on.
Thank you, Brandy.
Okay.
Okay, next, there is a lot of school maintenance items that are continuously occurring, and I know that Talia has some of this in her report as well, but I can just touch briefly on some of these. There is, as I mentioned, a false pass school electrical work that still needs to be completed. We were having difficulty finding the POTS line, which is a plain old telephone line. With Glenora's help, we were able to get a hold of actual person at ACS, and they are planning on doing a line locate next week or in the next couple weeks, 3 weeks or so. So they'll be going out there soon to locate the phone line. And once that's located, then we can complete the work, because we have to do a fire alarm dialer system, and it has to be plugged in the POTS line. So they have to locate it for us, because we can't find it ourselves. So that's one project. The false pass air water heater and air handling unit work there's some additional work that still needs to be conducted, but we will be tying that into our boiler and HVAC system maintenance. So none of this work is critical to operations. So we're gonna tie that in to make one less trip out for a contractor, which will reduce our costs. Actian School Work, KUCAR has been selected to conduct the repair work at there. The contract's been sent out. And once that's executed, they'll begin doing that work, and that work will be executed according to the agreement by July 31st of this year. Sandpoint School sewer lines, there's need of repair. Dow is very actively working with the school district to get photos, measurements of the pipe and all the determination of the elbows and bends and all that fun stuff. So they're working on that together so we can get the proposal accurately reflected on what's needed. And then we'll be releasing that to the contract term contractors as well and hope to get that work completed this summer. Because as I've been told, it's being held on by toilet paper at the moment. So we definitely want to get that fixed this summer. So that's a high priority for us right now. And as I mentioned, we're also working on this annual boiler and HVAC maintenance, which also includes the building automation systems. But essentially, as part of our 80-20 maintenance plan, we would like to make sure that all of the main essential components of the building, which is mostly the boiler, the HVAC, and this BAS system are looked at annually. And I wanted to combine them all at once because that wasn't being done in the past. We were being very reactive. So I'm hoping that by combining these three that we can address the issues quicker, faster, with less MOB and DMOB involved, because that's very, very expensive as we move forward. And that, lastly, the swimming pool, I don't have much of an update. We're meeting with the school district tomorrow to go over that, so I don't have much there, but some of the repairs have been done, and I'll have more of an update at the next meeting. I just couldn't get all of the parties in attendance prior to the meeting due to conflicts between myself and the superintendent, so we'll be having a meeting next week about the pool, or later, well, tomorrow about the pool. And then I'll move on. Another maintenance project is the Sandpoint Deep project. This is great news. I mean, essentially, you know, we're in the process of working on the 65% design. We have submitted a supplemental funding request because the cost of this project just keeps escalating as time goes on. And as we dig through the design, more and more items are identified and fleshed out. But in order, you know, I've been trying to think how to fund this, but on March 21st, the state did contact myself and the superintendent about a potential funding opportunity. And DEED is partnering with the Alaska Municipal League on Climate Pollution Reduction Grant, so a CPRG grant, with the U.S. Department of Environmental Agency. And basically, our project qualifies for the requirement of this emissions reduction. So they asked us for some information. I got it to them basically the next day because it was a really quick turnaround. But if this funding gets approved, we could get potentially about $3.8 million from this deep grant that would be available October 1st, 2024 for the project. So that's huge. And it's a huge relief because of I wasn't sure how I was going to fund it. So this would be huge and a huge help to the borough and the project. So, but I'll pause there. Is there any questions before I move on? Okay, hearing none, I guess the last two is the Coon. Oh, yes.
Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Go ahead.
You're talking about school maintenance. And I was up at the Falls Pass School here about 10 days ago for a luncheon. And looking at the south wall of that school, there was water pouring in through two of the windows in the school. There's probably black mold in that school. So I think, that's pretty major for children attending in that facility. So just something to keep in mind, and hopefully we can get that resolved.
Okay, yeah, thank you for bringing that to my attention. I wasn't aware of that issue, and those are the things that we need to know because we can't fix it if we're not told. So I appreciate you letting us know that, and Talia will follow up tomorrow with the school itself to find out more information. So thank you for that, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay, so a couple other things, just the Akoon feasibility study. That on April 4th, the Corps did announce that they have completed that study, which is fantastic. That will now be reviewed by their policy and legal compliance review, and then it will go before the chief of engineers in their report for congressional delegation, which is anticipated to happen on July 16th, 2024. So that's 3 years. That's been a three-year project that the borough staff's been involved in, as well as the tribe, the city of Actan, and the Corps. So that's a huge accomplishment to have that finished. So that's great news. And other than that, just a couple of things, but just a reminder that we will have our next meeting on May 9th, and then that will be the introduction of the FY25 budget. And then we will be hopefully having the second meeting for the budget on May 22nd, which is a Wednesday. So just please plan accordingly. That's a Wednesday, not a Thursday. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Questions? Okay. Pauline?
I'd just like to make a comment about Actan and Akpun. I got to travel through there last week. And I was in Actan for, I think, 3 or 4 days. But I got to see through action on the ground, and they are wonderful in Actan. And the gentlemen who work over at Actan, they are top-notch. And we thought we were going to be stuck there. And so, I mean, they'd already have beds made up with towels and everything in case you guys get stuck here. So they were so helpful, and everyone was so nice. So maybe let them know that there's people who really appreciate them.
Okay. So thank you.
Other comments, Paul?
Yeah, thanks. Annie, you said the first reading of the budget will be May 9th. And I know the legislature is still wrestling with the school funding. So I'm assuming we're going to have a direct report from the borough superintendent of schools, our school system, to give us a report on how that all fits in. That sound like a logical thing we're going to do?
Yeah, there'll be a few things. We'll have some information for you on the latest and greatest from the state. Obviously, their budget won't be approved by the time we've finished ours. There are some assumptions in there. And the superintendent is invited to attend if he can make it. But he also has provided me some information that will be included in the packet for your reading and for your education. So, we'll have a lot of information as much as we can available to you.
Refresh your memory when the legislature is going to schedule to adjourn.
My guess is as good as yours. I think last year it went on for months. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure when it will be.
Do you know when the normal 90 day or whatever they've got set? Is it in end of April or first part of May?
May, but I'm not sure. I'd have to ask because they haven't had normal in a long time.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I'll have.
They're all Abby normal. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Other. Okay. Thank you, Annie. Paulia.
Hello, Mayor and Assembly. My report is also in the packet. It's been a while since I've spoken on this grant, but today I'm going to start off with the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant. The borough is applying for the Department of Energy to implement energy retrofits for the King Cove School. Mainly what we're trying to do is replace the current lighting with LED lighting. And on March 28th, I did reach out to EECBG fellows, and through their advice, I switched from a grant to an equipment rebate voucher, which is about $75,000. And so, yes, I'm currently working on that. The deadline for this is April 30th. I have the main structure of the grant already written out. So this week and last week, I've really been working to just kind of fatten it up and get a little bit more meat in there. So hopefully by next week, I can get it out for Dow and ECI to review. Next is the Healthy and Equitable Communities Grant. So again, we've made some pretty big progress on that one. On March 26th, I did submit a prior approval letter to the state of Alaska to request the purchase of a generator for the Cold Bay Clinic. And 4 minutes later, it was approved. So I'm really happy about that. They found it necessary as it would keep the clinic operational during potential power outages. Yesterday, I did go ahead and send in my quarterly report to the state, notifying them of the pending approval of Resolution 2437, authorizing UIC Napford LLC to proceed with early release work for the Cold Bay Clinic. And on the next reporting, I'll be able to go ahead and let them know that that's been approved. So thank you, Assembly. Andy did touch a little bit on the Sands Point School sewer pipes. Again, Eric with Dow is actively working with Drayton. We've received images, and they're working to draft a scope of work to replace the current cracked and problematic pipes. I'm sure some of you have known within the King Cove School there was a fire, and on March 29th, Annie did go ahead and submit a claim to AMLJIA for the fire loss. We're currently just waiting for further instructions on how we move forward with that. A couple of maintenance projects or just general projects that I'm working on is right now is in Accutan. I am working with Tacoma Diesel currently on some issues that we're having with the current Accutan hangar generator. On March 12th, it was reported that that generator had malfunctioned and completely stopped working. Prior to that, there were issues with the heat restoration and the door controller not working. So until we figure out the issue with the generator, get that repaired, the heat restoration and the hangar door controller, that's going to be postponed. But again, we are actively working on that. And I do know that Tacoma Diesel does anticipate to be in Accutan around May 7th. So again, I'll keep you guys updated on that. With the Cold Bay signs, the Department of Transportation did submit a notice of load posting to the borough. They found that the piles were decayed with reducing the structure's capacity. So load posting signage was required. I did engage with Warning Lights to manufacture and deliver the signs for the Cold Bay Bridge. On February 29th, they were received. I'm working with Lori to get them installed. And once they are installed, she'll go ahead and let me know. I'll be able to get the pictures sent over, the memo, and we will be in compliance with DOT. Last but not least, I just finished off with the regular meetings I've attended. So the last month, I've been really more so focused on some of these grants activities that I'm working on, EECBG, HEC, and also trying to rectify the issue with the generator issues over in Accutan. And that is pretty much it. If anyone has any questions, let me know.
Thanks, Talia. Questions? Paul?
Yes. Talia, you mentioned that there's going to be a new sign for the amount of weight that can be put on the ramp out to the dock in Cold Bay. What are the new amounts? I don't see an exact amount.
2,500 tons.
Okay,
2,500 tons. I want to make sure I'm using the right.
Oh, that's a lot. 2,500 tons.
Yes.
I mean, total weight.
I don't know. Maybe like three elephants. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, if we could have a clarification of the amount.
Pounds, I'm sorry.
We'll get you clarification on that, but the load rating did get decreased due to some pipe or like the corrosion.
Okay.
Corrosion.
It's about somewhere around half of what.
Okay, it'd be nice. Ferry's coming, that's all. And then, Talia, you mentioned the morgue, the Chinook, that was going to go to Nelson Lagoon. So that proposal is dead? Is that what you're saying?
It's not dead. It's something that we're still working on. I'm working with the affordable supply with getting that more properly delivered to the correct location. That's been a little bit of a challenging. So, but yes, I don't have anything to report on that as of yet. I'm still waiting to hear back. But when I do hear more, I will definitely keep everyone updated.
Okay, so if the morgue has more life to it, you'll let us know. Okay, thank you.
Continuing saga, the wandering morgue.
I'm sorry, guys. It was 23 tons.
There you go.
Tons. That's a lot. 2,300. Sorry about that.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Ernie. Thank you, Talia.
Thank you.
Thank you. My report is also in the packet. The last week or so since Monday, the April the 1st, and just ended Tuesday, was the North Fishery Management Council. Always happy to see fishermen in attendance, and there were several throughout the meeting. The big agenda item was C2, the chum salmon bycatch in the pollock fishery. I had submitted a comment letter. I had testified to the advisory panel and then again to the council. Kylie Thompson had some really good testimony as well. And some lines of communication kind of opened up. The AP motion passed 21-0, added a new alternative, which if I was on the AP, I would have blown a gasket because it mentioned Area M, and Area M has nothing to do with the federal fisheries. Thank goodness the council motion did not have Area M, but it did include language about a corridor. One of the problems with, you know, the genetic studies show the pollock fishery caught way less salmon or chum salmon bycatch and even less of the AYK salmon, but a lot of that is caught close to shore in what they call cluster, genetic cluster one. And so it tends to be a problem. Joe Bundren was actually in the audience listening to some of the testimony. And a lot of the testimony went real long. The chair of the AP and the council had a hard time cutting people off who had come such distances from AYK. So that's that. I spent a couple days at the joint boards. I was able to provide my local AC's minutes to the joint board. The joint board, both the Board of Fish and the Board of Game, they meet for 2 days about every 5 years on stuff related to advisory committees and the process to develop proposals. I would just mention that one Board of Fish member asked a question how they could consolidate the ACs of False Pass, Nelson Lagoon, King Cove, and Sandpoint into one. So my advice to ACs is to be as active as possible because there's at least one board member who would like to see us as one voice instead of four. The deadline for Board of Fish proposals for the statewide shellfish was yesterday. I know of at least three crab proposals that were submitted from our area, so that's great. If you're interested in game for our area, May 1st will be the deadline. And there's links in my report. And for ACs, there's a new coordinator, Natalie Romo, in Dillingham, and there's a link to her email. It was not a joke, but on April Fool's Day, the governor appointed two Board of Fish. She reappointed Mark Carlson Van Dort and Calista Corporation attorney Curtis Chamberlain. Curtis had his confirmation hearing in the Senate Resources yesterday, and he's very well spoken, and all the written and oral testimony was supportive of him. Calista is the lands of the YK Delta, and so it may be a problem for our area. We'll wait and see. We'll hold judgment. In the Fishery Council, the governor nominated John Moeller and John Jensen for Jensen's seat, and he also appointed or nominated Brian Ritchie, the current AP chair, and alternates. It was my suggestion to the mayor that we send a letter supporting both John and both Johns, and I would think maybe Brian Ritchie because he's going to get that seat. But if you guys have any suggestions, I would take that, or the mayor might take that. Washington governor submitted four names, and last on the list is the current holder, Ann Vanderhoven. Becca Robbins, just Claire of Ocean Conservancy, is the first nominee. Ann hit me up several times looking for our support. It was my suggestion to the mayor that we don't get involved in Washington politics, but Ann suggested to me, she's the only one on the list who supports the pollock industry, that we are kind of the pollock industry kind of supports us. So if you're interested, John Moore also requested support later. Alaska legislature, I did testify to the House Fisheries, basically on Charlotte's letter that she had previously submitted. Again, we had Curtis Chamberlain's confirmation hearing yesterday, and tomorrow is Mark Carlson Van Dort's confirmation hearing. And then I put some new information from Joe Sullivan. Then I got some other information from Shannon Carroll of Trident. He pointed out that the council, North Pacific Council, has audio recordings going back as far as the December 1999 meeting. I have yet to go and listen to it, but I will, and I'll let you know what I hear when I do. It just kind of talks about the discussion, how they moved from just keeping their processing in 1 year, moving it to, or from forever into just 1 year processing. And then there's links to the draft Alaska Salmon Research Task Force draft report, and then that press release from Silver Bay and Peter Pan. I also, as far as recently attended, a seminar on marine pre-grant webinar. And I can take any questions on my report. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ernie. Questions? Okay, thank you. Good report. So, Jackie.
Yes, Mayor and Assembly members, my report is in the packet. I'll start off, I have an audit placeholder on my report, so I just wanted to let you guys know that it was submitted to the Federal Clearinghouse, which is kind of the last step in being officially done. So it's there, and I got like a month or two to kind of refocus for the year end coming up here to start making plans for the next audit. So it never ends, which is why it's still on my meeting report. So last month, on my meeting report, I let you know that we had sent the chart of accounts to Cassell, and I had met with him after I got back from my vacation, and we went through and I received a rough draft from them showing how our accounts would look. We had a few modifications to make sure that it was going to show us the right information we wanted to see and split some of the funds up into separate funds so that we could find the data easier. And she kind of went over the ways, separate ways to use the accounts and subcodes and activity stuff that we don't currently have in our current system. So that was nice. I submitted the changes to her that we discussed, and I have not heard back from her, so I'm hoping that means we don't need to do any other modifications and that we're going to be put in the queue for the next phase, which I believe is going to be the pre-live, and where they start using our actual data from this year to implement into our new system. So hopefully that's the case. I haven't heard back from her, so I'm assuming if she would have sent me back right away that she needed more information, we would be still trying to tweak the chart of accounts, but I'm happy. I believe they're in a good spot right now. The financial policies and procedures, I've been doing a lot of research on this one. The biggest section of the strategic plan for this year is going to be on our grants, because we do have federal grants and state grants, and then we do have just like private grants. They all kind of have different guidelines on how you spend the money and the procurement processes and how you report the funding. So I'm trying to go through the federal guidelines, the state guidelines, our own guidelines, and trying to kind of summarize them in a more simplified manner so that in any given moment we receive a grant, we'll know it's federal. Okay, this is what we need to do. Oh, this is state. We need to check, you know, this check through this process, all in one direction, because it's a lot. The uniform guidance is it's not a fun read. If you need some help falling asleep that night, just pull it up, because it's time consuming. And I'd rather that in the future when we receive funding, it doesn't take as much of our effort just trying to spend the money. Routine tasks are on track. March is nearly closed out. We're just waiting for a couple little bit of couple pieces of information to close the month out and then start preparing the quarter reports for the end of March. I don't have anything else. It was kind of a short report. I had a nice little vacation, but I will happily answer any questions.
Okay.
Everyone may have.
Thank you, Jackie. Questions?
Go ahead. We switched from BDO to Cassell, right? That was the switch over on the accounting system?
Yeah, we're in the process of switching. We're still using BDS. Currently using it, and Cassell is actually doing the conversion. They're like building the program to our needs and setting it all up. So it's not a lot of man hour on our end trying to figure out the program. They're actually going to put all of our stuff in there, make sure it aligns with all of our data from BDS to Cassell, make sure that the auditors see the clear conversion because they need to see that, and then we'll start probably moving simultaneously into Cassell and BDS at the same time just to make sure we're capturing everything we want to be capturing before we're actually fully switched over.
How long did it take from start till now? How long
have it's been a long process. We've been going, trying to get through to Cassell for a while. The pre-live phase was right before the first information happened. I'm going to say like right before the 2022 audit, and we're trying to wait for audited figures to give the data to them. And that audit took a long time. So we went with the figures that we had, and then now we're into the third phase of the project. It took a long time to get out of the first phase, but when I had last spoken to someone at Cassell, they said that there's numerous entities that have been in the first phase for years and years. It's just trying to make sure you're giving them everything you need. And for us, it was a lot of cleaning up of our data to make sure that we knew all of our assets were where they were, all of the accounts, like we've had multiple, like, I mean, I must have gone through and shortened our chart of accounts to a third of what it was. We had a lot of duplicate information in there, and you can't just leave an account. You got to make sure you follow the trail, what's in there, why it's in there, and if you can move it into where you're going to move it to. And that kind of you want to go through with your auditors so your auditors know what you're doing in your system, because you don't just turn an account off because you're not using it anymore, because all of the accounts have balances. And there's proper ways to maneuver those balances if they're unnecessary, which we had some unnecessary ones. They just weren't being used correctly. So it's been a long process. It's a lot longer than I wanted, but I'm happy we're in like the third phase by now, which is going to be the pre-live, and we'll start actually using our data.
So Jackie, do you have a time yet on when the transfer over will take place?
As soon as I hear back that we're in the next queue, it's going to be about 60 to 90 days for the pre-live phase, okay, which is when they're going to start asking for our data, which is going to be kind of like right around like a year-end time. So the data I'm going to be giving them is going to be like auditor, not auditor approved, but like has been audited, so that they'll be, I think it'll work out good where hopefully we're able to implement either January, like a January 1st, it'd be nice to be able to say, hey, we're going to do it in this next fiscal year beginning in July, but I can't say that until I hear back that we're actually in the next phase.
So we should check with you in Christmas time?
There will probably always be a Cassell placeholder on my meeting reports. this to me is like a child, like I'm, you know, it's a baby. I wanted to see it come to fruition here. I cannot wait to get into Cassell, but I just, you can't just, you know, flip a switch and you're there, especially when you have to build the program and set up the accounts. And it wouldn't be really good if the auditors just thought it's just like, oh, we're doing this now and moving that, because that's really hard. You want to keep track of your data well and have a good paper trail and be transparent with it. And they're going to want to look and see, okay, here's this account. It's been transferred to this account and matched all up.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, the city of Sandpoint may have to do that in the future shortly, and it doesn't sound easy. So thank you.
Yeah. No, it's not, but I think the time that you put into it is worth it if you're going to get something better than what you're getting now.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Other questions for Jackie? Okay, thank you, Jackie. So that's the last of the reports. So thank everybody for your reports. Assembly comments. So now is a good time. Paul. Go ahead, Josie.
Oh, I want to congratulate the PJACs on their ASAA first place winning.
There you go. Paul?
Well, I'd probably just repeat what everybody already knows, that our fisheries are in tough shape, and the two big sticking points right now are what's going to happen to King Cole, Peter Pan, what's going to happen to that facility, nobody seems to know. And then I'm glad Tom's on the line, but because the Trident Falls Pass facility is still up in the air, and I don't believe, at least I haven't read anything about that. And so, and the prices are down all around, and I'm just kind of repeating what everybody knows, and hopefully some of those things will get resolved in the short term rather than the long term. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Other assembly?
To Paul, I wish I knew Paul, but we're on the phone, I think, every day from this community to some people that may be involved in this facility, the Trident's here. So actually, I talked to a big little bit this morning about that, so that's about what I know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Other comments? Okay, so I work with Ernie and them, and we keep looking at fisheries and what's going on out here, and every time you think you got it partially figured out, it all changes the next couple hours. So I think it's going to keep doing that for a while. Hopefully all of the fleet that was Peter Pan, hopefully they all get markets. It sounds promising, so we'll just have to keep watching and see what happens. And of course King Cole with their plant, that's going to be everybody's on kind of worried about what's going to happen over there, so we'll have to wait and see. Okay, any public comment?
More here, Alvin. I guess, sorry to not, but the clicker was way across the table. But anyway, I guess that you say something about people. Well, fortunately for the drift fleet, we got a market with Silver Bay. Sounds like the same fleet. They're going to take them all. So, but we're really confused on this King Cove plant. They don't answer calls anymore. The Peter Pan folks. We're going to have another meeting tomorrow with Silver Bay, the King Cove administration, to talk about the King Cove facility. But there was a lot of confusion on the leak report versus their press release with, I know they made the deals with Dillingham and Fort Moeller, but then, you know, it was all conflicting with the leak that King Cole was involved somehow. Talked with Silver Bay on asking them a few questions about King Cole, and they say, we can't answer anything. King Cole, we've been so far away and so far out, we're not going to know anything. We can't tell you anything. So you go and try and call Peter Pan, and we're going to try and set up a meeting with them. But what their plans are here, the reason being that the city of King Cove and their infrastructure for the water, sewer, landfill, and hydro, trying to sell the power, you know, it was always trying to be done. But the debt service on the infrastructure that we upgraded is not going away. and then the drop of a hat, we lose 100 years. So I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Warren. I know you guys are busy working on that over there, so hopefully everything comes out for the better here in the end. We'll see. Any other assembly comments before I go to public comment? Hearing none. Public comment.
Hey, Mr. Mayor. Kenny here.
Good, Ken.
Well, but I guess, you know, we're almost sunk. Pumps ain't going to help it out. You know, I got my email from Rob Gillum right here yesterday. I texted him at 3 in the afternoon. He must be a pretty busy guy because his text came back at 4:02 in the morning. He texts back, tells me that if there's any concerns of the King Cole Peter Pan, you have to go to Silver Bay. So, and I found out through Silver Bay, there's only one person you can talk to right now, and she and Rob Gillum did the deal. And their plans right now are not to touch it or open it, although they have concerns of how they're going to work this summer without any fuel. The only fuel available for the King Cove tenders, Peter Pan tenders, which are all now Silver Bay, and the Silver Bay tender and the Silver Bay fleet is the 140,000 gallons in King Cove. And if they get some from the Trident Flat Falls Pass. So I'm asking the borough if we get a delegation together and get the tribes to go after Congress to get us to get some money to open that. Give them an idea where the government opens up that plant, canned salmon. The government always needs canned salmon. You know, get them to do it. Somebody's going to have to do it. Because I don't have a paper in front of me with a contract, but the guy took my name and stuff and said I was part of the Peter Pan deal that they made in Dillingham, and I would be getting one, but never did see it yet. Still a ton of uncertainty up there, even in Dillingham. At first, it's always been in Silver Bay, Bend and Bristol Bay, they don't buy a set net fish. That's just the way they work. But now, they got to go through a whole bunch of meetings and change their model to take in all these set netters. Because there's a bunch of set netters in Natick and a bunch in Dillingham that Peter Pan had. And they vowed to take over these people. And they say they're going to help the ones in King Cove and Sandpoint. So I don't know what the next move is to do.
Yeah, Ken.
I think if we can get a delegation to get the tribes together and get after Congress to get some money somehow.
Yeah, I've been talking to some of the Peter Pan boats here. I know you've been talking to a few of them too, as they told me they've been talking with you. I keep watching this every day and talking to different people, and by the time you find out something, and then something else pops up on your computer, and then the whole thing changes again. It seems to be moving fairly quickly and changing all the time. From last week to this week, there's been quite a few changes that took place.
Yes.
But then you try and get a hold of anybody, you can't get a hold of no one. And then half the time you don't know who to talk to. So, I'm kind of stumped. If tribes and everybody want to get together, I'm sure we could meet with them too. But, and then fishermen, you know, it's too bad we don't have the old PMA type system in place, because trying to figure out who actually has a market and who's looking for a market or who would want another market, it's almost impossible to figure it out because there's no entity to work with anymore.
Go at Trident. You can go to Trident. Well, you're blue in the face right now. They'll tell you, we're not taking another boat. It don't matter if you're local, you're outside, or whatever.
Right.
So limits, you know, it limits Sandpoint too, you know, the fishermen there. But the most important thing when you talk to any of your fishermen in Sandpoint is Silver Bay has still never heard from a bunch of them yet. Mostly the centenaries. And I talked to the guy in charge, Sandy's owner, for doing the tender work. He needs to know how many centenaries want to fish. So get those people to call Sandy or Mark Anderson just to get on that list.
Yeah. You know, and maybe that's something we should put on our In the Loop also, is name and numbers there. We could probably get from you.
Yeah.
All,
I don't know.
Yeah. I think so, Paul got a question for you. Kenny. Paul has a question for you.
Oh, no, just a comment. You know, that we have a meeting coming up on May 9th, and I think as part of our agenda, we should invite the processors who are around to give us an update on the status of the season. That way, you know, it's an opportunity to, for everybody to perhaps get the straight scoop and see how this year might shape up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, we could.
That's your next meeting, May 9th?
Yeah.
Yeah. The sooner the better. Because Corey Campbell and Rob Gillen are the only two people that did this deal. Nobody else, even Troy, he told his own fishermen the next day that King Cove was going to open. But he didn't know that, well, that wasn't part of the deal. They have control of it if they want to open it. There was two stipulations in it. And one was the ammonia pipe that got caught during the fire and the new generator that was supposed to be there.
Okay. Well, we could have Annie knows Cora and them, and I don't know, we could see if we can put the invite out there for them to meet with us and see if they do, but I would be surprised unless that much farther down the line, maybe they'll know a little bit more, but currently you can't get anybody to talk to anybody, but we can try it.
Yeah, you know, the Port Muller thing changed from day one to the second day. It was Port Muller was going to open. Well, no, it's going to open, but it's only for a support facility. Fuel, water, groceries, and the stockroom, but and ice, possibly. That was another question. Where are they going to supply ice? But that wasn't made up yet either.
So let me get this straight, though. But Port Muller is going to operate, though, right? Or are you saying?
No, it's not going to. They're not going to cut a fish. They're just going to open it for support facility.
Oh, see, I got the wrong information, because the other day I heard that they were going to, you know, that they were going to fully operate there. I was kind of excited about that.
I was too. We all were.
Should we add a spot in our agendas, like under Ernie's, like, do we dare, for comments from... Wonder who would all come.
Well, no, we could, for our next agenda, we can just put on, we can do an invite to all the processors and have a spot for them to participate. And we've done that in the past, so that's fine. But we can do that for sure.
Maybe a lot of people come.
So.
And Trident's supposed to have an announcement tomorrow on what they think the season's going to look like in Sandpoint. Just talking with Kylie, he thought that it was going to be like a 20,000-pound limit per day per seiner. Because right now, they can assure 400,000 capacity. They want more, but they don't know if they can get it.
Yeah, I heard that a couple of days ago. I was kind of surprised. But
yeah, it is. That's surprising. It's the rude awakening what it is.
Yeah.
And if it's at 50 cents, yeah, look out.
Okay. Other comment from the public?
Thank you, Kevin.
But So anyway, yeah. So Ken, we will reach out to the companies that are processing or probably processing or not processing and see if we can get them together. And then later, of course, in the before the season starts, you know, we'll have Fish and Game and everybody else in attendance on towards the end of the month, I think, next one. Okay.
It's hard because Rob Gillum's hard to deal with. He tried to sell the Gill Farm and Falls Pass to the Value Corporation, and he don't even got nothing to do with it.
That's right. They don't have anything to do with that land up there. The corporation had a stipulation in that land that a pig would put that processor in. There's a stipulation there that says that processing facility, the fuel farm, and all that land would come back to the corporation if it's not doing seafood.
And this is the kind of guy we're dealing with. He's a tough guy. I don't know.
Another thing is that, you know, I'm a shareholder in Silver Bay, but trying to get information on the Silver Bay in an open meeting is probably pretty impossible.
It is.
So are you going to repossess the fuel farm and have a ribbon cutting soon? Just wondering.
That'd be nice. I hope so.
I hope so, too. I hope you guys get it, because we're going to need fuel. I was told there's going to be an A, a B, and a C list. So, or Silver Bay.
Yeah, and I don't know how the heck that could
work. They're taking on a huge fleet. They want every fish on a chick neck.
Who has power over the King Cove plant then? Peter Penn's still an entity. Can they rent it? Or does Silver Bay have the power to do what they want with it?
According to Rob Gillum, you have to talk to Cora Campbell.
So they own the rights already.
Okay. Other comment? All right. We will work on some of those issues, because it's a big concern to everybody, not just fishermen, every little business in our area, it is. All right. So our next meeting date is May 9th. That'll be our regular meeting, and that'll be the first reading of the budget. Paul?
Move to adjourn.
Okay, we have a motion to adjourn. So we stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Congratulations, King Cove, your basketball team. Thank you.
Okay, I'll do my
all I can say is wild.
That one. You know,